Welcome to the Week 14 edition of the Bird's Eye View podcast. I'm Zach Berman, Eagles beat writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer, and we have another good show for you this week as the Eagles advanced to 7-5, remaining in playoff contention. Nick Foles won his fourth consecutive game for the Eagles. He's hot, they're hot, and they face a good Detroit Lions team this weekend at Lincoln Financial Field. We will discuss that matchup with my fellow Inquirer beat writer, Jeff McClain, along with other topics, including the defense, including Nick Foles' continued solid play, as well as the future of Nick Foles here in Philadelphia. You will hear from Chip Kelly as he gave an update on the injuries on Wednesday, and he talked about some other pertinent topics heading into the Lions game. And you'll also hear from LeSean McCoy, the NFL's number two rusher facing a very strong Lions rush defense. So that's the show this week. Let's get right to it. Here's my interview with Jeff McClain. Joined as we are each week with my fellow Inquirer Eagles beat writer, Jeff McClain. And Jeff, we've started our conversation each week talking about Nick Foles, but Nick's fairly entrenched for the time being. So let's look on the other side of the ball, and that's the defense, because really that unit has been the biggest difference from the beginning of the season to now. And there's discussion about D'Amico Ryans and Connor Barwin. You look at the defensive line, Kerry Williams, Bradley Fletcher have played well in the defensive backfield. But from your perspective, who's the most valuable player on the defense and why?
I know some people have kind of been writing that Connor Barwin has him because he does so much at that outside linebacker spot, it's called the Jack, and because it's kind of a jack of all trades position. But I got to stick with D'Amico Ryans just because he's not only in the middle of that defense, he runs the show, he makes the calls, he lines everybody up, and he's played well. I mean, he's been very good against the run. And has gotten a little better against the pass, I believe, than he was even last year, which may have something to do with the scheme and what he's being asked to do. But I'll stay with D'Amico, although certainly Fletcher Cox up front, he plays the most along the line, does a really lot, not only in the run, but he's also asked to pass rush more than any of the defensive ends or nose tackles. He's a guy that you can argue when he's not on the field as much as D'Amico. D'Amico's out there for every play. So he's the guy I would choose, and probably Connor Barwin also as well.
And now you wrote something. It's been 2 months since you wrote it, but it was really interesting at the time, and that was the effect that Jerry Azzanero has on the defense. And Jerry's almost like a right-hand man for Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly's the head coach, but Billy Davis is the defensive coordinator. There's a lot of hands on this defense, but who deserves the most credit for the improvement in terms of the way they're playing now compared to those first 4 or 5 weeks of the season?
Yeah, I think it's got to be Billy. He is defensive coordinator. I know Jerry Azzanero has a lot of influence with the scheme, and even more than that, certainly with how Chip runs the team, runs the organization. First word about that back in May when I saw the title that he had as assistant head coach, and just the fact that he was one of the only position coaches that he brought with him from Oregon. I felt there had to be a reason. And if you talk to some of the people that had worked with him, Todd Light, he's the assistant defensive backs coach. He spoke about Azzanero and how he's very good at game planning, looking at an offense and figuring ways to exploit mismatches. And I think he certainly played that role with Bill Davis. But Bill's the coordinator, and he's the one that ultimately makes the game plan. He's the one that's calling the plays out there. And that, to me, has been very impressive because early on there were some plays, there was some scheming that I wasn't really sure about when you had Brandon Boykin playing kind of an outside linebacker spot and blitzing. And then you had some other positions, guys doing some funky things. And I think Bill was just trying to find his way. He wasn't really sure about the players that he had and what they could do. But they've really kind of started to gel here over the last 8 weeks. They've gotten into a groove, and he seems more confident in making calls when to send the blitzes and when not to.
Yeah, I would agree, and I do think the key, too, is he has such a better understanding of his personnel than he had earlier this year. And when I look at that personnel, the most promising group is the defensive line, and you've written about this, I've written about this. The age of the line is – They're so young. They're building blocks going forward. But when you look at the defense, obviously they need a pass rusher long term. They're probably going to need more cornerback help. But who do you see as the cornerstones of this group, as the people that Chip Kelly can build around on that side of the ball during his time here?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the kind of line. I think all three of those guys that start will be around here for a while. Fletcher Cox and Cedric Jordan at defensive end, and Benny Logan at the nose tackle spot. I'm not really sure about some of the reserves. Vinny Curry, he's still a very good pass rusher, but I'm not sure if he is an ideal two-gap guy. They definitely tried to trade him before the trade line deadline back in October. Linebacker, I can see D'Amico sticking around for another year. His contract does increase next season. And he will be, I believe, 30. But he's such a great leader. I don't know if I would see him going. Connor Barnum will be back. Trent Call, I'm not so sure about. Again, will be over 30 and is making a lot of money. I think Brandon Graham will be back. They got him for another year on his contract. And he probably could jump into that outside linebacker spot that Trent Call's been playing. And as you mentioned, they'll probably get a young pass rusher as well. And then Michael Kendricks is young. He's not going anywhere. And in the secondary, I think Earl Wolf certainly will be a guy that will be back next year. I'm not so sure about Nate Allen, Patrick Chung, or either corner. Although I wouldn't be surprised if they bought back both of them too, because unless you go out and sign more free agents, which they probably won't do at that position, or they draft the cornerback very early, there doesn't seem like there's much need to get new cornerbacks, because those guys have done a decent job. They're not great. Yep. I don't think anyone is, under that illusion. But they have done a decent job, and I think if I can get you through another year, if you want to address some other spots.
And when you talk about building blocks, you look at Cox, Kendricks, Brandon Boykin, all from that 2012 draft class. But the player from the 2012 draft class who's played the best is Nick Foles. And the story earlier this week is whether he'll be the building block at quarterback at least in 2014. You and I are both in agreement that the next 4 weeks will be a big determining factor in that. But what's your read on Nick now? Because each week seems to be a barometer of the quarterback and of his progress.
He keeps playing well. He keeps kind of proving some of the people that have questioned his ability to start. I don't know if I've ever questioned that. I just not sure if he's the franchise or if he's the guy that you want to build around for the future. And as I wrote earlier this week, I don't know if anyone could say that. I don't think Chip Kelly can even say that. And that's not trying to discredit what Nick has done, but you have to really see if he can do some of the things in 2 minute drill and win a game, if you can do it in December, if you can do it in the playoffs, before you decide if you're going to go ahead with him. And they are afforded a little time here because they don't have a financial commitment to him. Yep. Because he was only a third-round pick. And they'll have that opportunity probably next year now, because it looks like the draft isn't going to be as rich with franchise-type quarterbacks, because Marcus Mariota, as we all know, has now declared that he will stay for his next season at Oregon. And it looks like Hundley isn't leaving you at UCLA. And Winston from Florida State, we know, can't leave. He's only a freshman, redshirt freshman. So the draft class that everyone thought was going to be rich with great quarterbacks, there are only a few of them now. And I'm just thinking, because of the way Nick's playing, you can kind of go into the draft not thinking you have to get a quarterback right away. Maybe they do take one, but I really don't think it'll be in the first round.
And I was asked something the other day about comparing Nick to the other top young quarterbacks in the league, and the question was posed to me from an Eagles fan: what has Nick not done that Kaepernick, Russell Wilson, Andrew Luck, Matthew Stafford? I think those were the quarterbacks that the guy mentioned. And the obvious answer is that all those quarterbacks have been to the playoffs. Some of them, I believe all but Stafford, have won a playoff game. Luck hasn't, but has been to the playoffs. Do you think Nick needs to go to the playoffs this year to be looked at in that category, or is it just the statistics and the production on the field?
You know, I still have to see a little more. I mean, what if they lose the next four games? I'm not saying how are they going to lose the next four games. What if they lose the next four games, miss the playoffs, and he plays poorly? I don't think that's going to happen. I think we've now seen enough of Nick to know that even his worst probably won't have you thinking that he doesn't have a shot to be the quarterback of the future. But if he gets in the playoffs, then again, I just really think that they have another year with him, and they can move on from there. But I think some people think he's got to win in the playoffs, and I think that's kind of exaggerating what he needs to do to be the quarterback beyond this year. But again, I know so many people are concerned about this, but I want to see how it plays out over these next four games.
And so let's look at the first game in this next four games, and that's the Lions. We'll touch on their offense in a second, but I'm curious your thoughts on a trip down memory lane a bit. Jim Washburn, he's not the defensive coordinator, he's not even the defensive line coach, but he does have an influence on that Lions defensive line, which is one of the best in the league, particularly the interior. And he was such a polarizing figure in Philadelphia. When they brought him in, what was your memory of the way the defense was going, and how much different was that 11 season from that 12 season? Because you were right there on the ground floor during both of those.
Yeah, I'm not sure. When you say polarizing, I'm not sure there's many people on one end of that pole.
Jason Babin.
Yeah, but in terms of people in Philadelphia. Yeah. I think Washburn's a good coach. I mean, his track record showed it in Tennessee, where he got a lot of protection out of some marginal players in certain circumstances. But him coming to Philadelphia ended up being a horrible decision, not as much because of him, but because they wanted to run, Andy Reid wanted to run this wide nine scheme up front. And that in turn led to, they hired Jim Washburn first, and then that in turn led to them hiring Juan Castillo because, some of the defensive coordinators they spoke to weren't going to be told how they're going to run their defensive line scheme, and Juan was willing to take the job, and Andy trusted him, so he put him in that spot, and this is a guy that's never really, we've written about this a million times, was a coordinator, a defensive coach at the NFL level. And it wasn't so much that the scheme doesn't work, it's just they didn't have the players for it. They didn't have the linebackers, didn't have the safeties that had to fill kind of these run gaps that were wide because of the wide nine. And, they were responsible for them because the front four were asked to pass rush only in a lot of circumstances. And it just kind of, it took them a while to get used to it. And by the time they did, late in 2011, then you had it was too late, then you had personnel changes in the second year with Washburn and Castillo in 2012, and Juan again was struggling and calling plays and putting teams away in the fourth quarter, and then you had him get fired, and then eventually you had Washburn get fired because this is a guy that was burying players like Brandon Graham, and he had a very difficult personality for some coaches to handle and deal with, and that was the end of him. And the whole thing, it'll be a dark time
in the Eagles' history.
I'm sure people don't like reliving it, but it's certainly a lesson to be learned moving forward for any coaching staff, I think, that thinks that one system will come in and solve all the problems.
And so let's spin this forward to Sunday. How much of an issue will that line, and particularly those two defensive tackles, and Ndamukong Suh and Nick Fairley, be for the Eagles? Because the Eagles' interior offensive line has struggled at times this season, and there are games, you can look at the first Giants game where that was an issue. Do you think it's going to reemerge on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, those guys are good. they've had decent success against some really good interior linemen, and then they've had moments when they haven't done as well. Dontari Poe, I think, really gave Jason Kelce all he could handle when the Chiefs came to town. They did a pretty good job against Gerald McCoy when they played the Buccaneers. As you mentioned, the Giants kind of gave him some problems. Evan Mathis is probably the best run-blocking guard in the NFL. He's above average as a pass protector, but he's not great, and I think Fairley or Sue will give him problems. Kelce is a very good run blocker, especially when he's out in space. But again, he's not huge, and big guys give him a little problems. And Todd Hermans is still a stout run blocker, but in pass protection, he's kind of lost his quickness. And those guys are really quick off the ball. So I think, as you mentioned, Zach, that's going to be one of the key matchups in this game, and will go a long way in deciding who wins it.
And so then finally, we'll have our predictions officially on Bird's Eye View on Friday. But how do you see this game stacking up just in terms of the matchups? Obviously, Calvin Johnson on the offensive side, and I wrote about this in the Inquirer on Wednesday, the size that Detroit has, particularly in the red zone, it's low post basketball down there. So this is a real tough matchup, but we both thought the same thing last week. How do you see the Eagles going into this game?
We thought the same thing, and we were wrong.
Yep.
You know, I don't know yet. It's going to be a tough game. This game, I think the Eagles could lose, but I don't know if I could pick against them after four in a row, and the way Nick's playing and the way Chip's calling plays on offense and the defenses are playing. You mentioned Calvin Johnson. Of course, he's a guy that has to be reckoned with, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I think if he's going to get his eight catches for 100-something yards and a touchdown, it's really limiting the effectiveness of the other guys. Reggie Bush, you can't let kill you. He's been playing very well this year. But you can't let him be a compliment to Johnson, and then all of a sudden you got 200-something yards and two touchdowns. Same thing with Brandon Pettigrew. Drake Bell, who, you know, had a cup of coffee here in Philadelphia. He's become a nice second running back. If those guys start to pick up big yards, I think then you have problems. But I think the defense has been playing well enough that it shouldn't get out of hand. You know, I know Stafford's playing pretty well, but I just have a lot of faith, as I said earlier, in Nick Foles and Chip Kelly and what they're doing right now.
I would agree with that, and as I said, we'll have those predictions on Friday. Also on Friday, you can find Eagles Insights in Friday's paper. That's the best thing going in Eagles coverage right now, and then we'll have all the coverage leading up to the game and in Sunday Inquirer. Jeff, thanks as always. We'll reconvene next week talking about Eagles Lions, looking ahead to Eagles Vikings. Thanks, Jeff.
All right, thanks, Zach.
From the beat writers to the head coach, that's where we're going now. This is going to be a part of Chip Kelly's press conference with reporters on Wednesday. You'll hear him discuss a variety of topics, including the injuries, looking ahead to the Lions game, LeSean McCoy, and more. Here is Chip Kelly.
Chip, do you expect to have Earl or Mayo or Good available Sunday?
I don't know. I think Mayo's going to run around today. I think he's got to go to the independent, and they'll tell us if he's cleared. And those things are a day-to-day thing, so we don't have anything to say with that. But I'm hoping that Jeff's back. I don't know about Earl, you know, to be honest with you. And then Najee, we'll see what he can do.
So it is a concussion for Mayo?
Yeah, is that what it is? Yeah.
What's your recollection of Nick Fairley?
He's a really good football player. You know, he was, I think, the best lineman in the country when we played him in 2010, and, you know, he played that way. We played him in the championship game. He's very, very difficult to block. I think he's a lot more athletic. He's physical at the point of attack, but he can get off of blocks and chase plays down. Really starting to play that way. And then the fact that you can put him next to Sue, I think, is really what makes that defense go right.
Have screens to running backs and tight ends always been a big part of your offense, or are you playing to the skill set of Deshaun and offensive linemen that are very good out in space?
No, screens have always been a big part of our offense. I just think it's another tool in your toolbox, you know, to kind of slow the rush down and take advantage of what some people are doing and make them defend everything. So, but screens have always been a big part of wherever I've been.
But good screen personnel. I mean, your linemen are more athletic. You have a running back who can catch the pass well. If you didn't have that kind of skill set, would you still be trying to use it as much?
No, I mean, I think you're always trying to exploit your linemen in terms of what they do. But kind of the question, if you don't have guys to run the ball, you're not going to run the ball either. So I think part of what those guys do. They're good in space. But our linemen at Oregon were good in space. You know, that's part of what we're looking for. We're looking for athletic offensive linemen.
When you were putting that together, you had a monitor for Sean McCoy's carries a lot as he was getting a lot of carries earlier in the season.
I said we would. You guys said he was having a lot. But.
Well, all right. So you said you guys were going to make sure you were going to monitor his carries. Going forward, you were 4 games to go. How fresh does he look?
He looks fresh.
And can you elaborate on you know, you guys expected a lot from
freshy, fresher, freshy. He looks good. We don't have any ill effects. I mean, he's out here practicing every day. He comes out practicing on Tuesday and running around, so I think he looks good.
When you were putting together your staff, but why did you want to go with two tight ends coach, and what's kind of the dynamic between Ted and Justin with that group?
Justin's a guy I knew. He played at the University of Oregon, and then my last year there, he came up to visit. I have a lot of respect for him. Our tight end coach, Tom Osborne, coached him when I was at Oregon, and Justin wanted to get into coaching, and I wanted to. You know, obviously, I want to get a lot of young guys in here that are willing to work and do all the grunt work, the film breakdowns, to stay in here till 1 o'clock in the morning at night and make sure that everything's all set for us. And it was just, I knew he was going to be one of those guys. Him, Greg Austin on the offensive side of the ball, Press Taylor, guys that'll just get all that stuff done. And I think he's got a bright future from a coaching standpoint. And then obviously with Ted, you know, the first time I met him and sat down and interviewed with him, he's just. You know, there's a lot of intelligent people in the world, but there are not a lot of wise people in the world. And I think Ted has wisdom. And it was, you know, a guy that's been around this organization for as long as Ted has. And a great teacher, you know, just a guy that, you know, you're kind of that wily old sage veteran in the room that we can really bounce a lot of ideas off. So it was important to have Ted be part of the staff also.
Talk about the challenge. You guys have seen a lot of great receivers this year. Is anybody similar to that?
In this world, no. I mean, you look at the Cowboys game, and you would think when you have a guy triple covered, they're not going to throw the ball to him, but the staff throws it to him, and he goes up and catches it. You know, I think the combination of his size and his speed and explosiveness, I don't think there's anybody like that in this league. He can just go get the football. And, you know, I think sometimes when you're playing people, you can say, hey, if we double this guy with our play call, we got two good guys that can double him, you're in good shape, but they're still going to throw it up. And a lot of times he goes and gets it. That's what makes it really difficult.
When Lane lines up in the slot, would he have to report to the official to be an eligible receiver? And is that not even what you're trying to do there anyway?
No, he's not eligible. So.
Would you ever consider having
him? Sure.
Last one, guys. How about their offensive line? They have two rookies and a second-year guy out of tackle, and they've only given up 15 sacks. So what are some challenges that, you know, their offensive line?
I think a lot of the sacks, you know, a lot, and we've said it, I've said it a lot of the sacks are on your quarterback, and a lot of not getting sacks are on your quarterback, too. And the one thing with Matt Stafford is how quickly he gets the ball out of his hands. He's got one of the quickest triggers in the league where he can get the ball out, I think. He's been with that system since he's been there. He's got a great understanding of what they're doing. He knows where his receivers are. If you try to blitz him, I don't know why he doesn't get enough credit. I think he's one of the top quarterbacks in this league. And when you see him, if you've ever seen him in person throw the football, I mean, he's got as strong an arm as there is in the NFL. So I think he does a great job of also handling that. You know, it's the quarterbacks sometimes that hold the ball a little bit too much that are going to take the sacks. But I don't think that ball's coming out pretty quick and he can rip it. So.
That was Chip Kelly, and one of the players he discussed was LeSean McCoy. LeSean McCoy is number 2 in the NFL in rushing, facing one of the top rushing defenses in the NFL this week. Here's what he had to say about that matchup, about his workload, about this offense, about Nick Foles, and much more when he spoke with reporters on Wednesday.
LeSean, in your time here, how explosive would you say this offense is now compared to other years?
We've had some explosive years offensively. So I've been there under Marty and Andy. But just kind of compare it. It's very similar. 1 point stats up, 1 point up, moving the ball. So I mean, you definitely compare it similar as far as production wise.
You had a good game last week against a top 5 run defense. You got another top 5 run defense this week. Is that one of those things where you're getting used to just good defenses trying to take you out of the equation?
Yeah, I think it's just a team effort. As well as Nick is playing, the teams will have to make some adjustments. Grabbing some air, grabbing. So it's pretty much whatever you want to do. They're tough defense, especially against the run. So, but the good thing about Coach Kelly is going to put on the ball. if they're one of the best teams. And it will make plays. They're going to run game and also pass, make some plays. Willie makes a play, like I said before, I mean, it's been lights out. So, probably get the defense, whatever you want to take, type of option.
Now, the past 2 years, we saw the wide nine. What's it like running against those wide splits?
It's so open because drop so wide. The difference with this wide nine is two guys inside, fairly, and two, being kind of dominant. So it helps it out a little differently than a lot of wide nines. But it's still tough because there's natural holes, there's natural gaps. And it makes it tough on the linebackers because they have to replace it. So they're kind of a fast defense, so that also helps out playing that wide. But it, like I said, it's natural lanes. You know, so you really have to be on your game to kind of control the gaps.
Chip was saying that a lot of what you're facing, you actually don't see ahead of time on tape, but they're kind of in adjustments the other teams are making on the fly. How difficult is that when you're not? It's hard to prepare for it.
Yeah, it is, because it's you've had so much success so early. Turn the ball. You know, every team has different ways to kind of defend it, but a lot of them are definitely similar. I mean, but they're making adjustments on the run. Just last week, just the way the backers flow, just how to contain it. You know, that's the biggest thing, really, contain it, stay in the box. And then on the reads, certain things, just trying to get. But that's fun. That's fun too. You know, every game we're not going to run for 100 yards. But we're getting the wins. We're getting the wins and we're making plays. So I'm fine with that. I think putting the ball kind of in his hands, if he has the offense, we're definitely confident in that option.
Speaking of Nick, have you really gotten to know him as he's gotten to be? You know,
yes. I think I know Nick.
What do you, that's what I'm asking. How would you describe him? What's he like?
Cool guy, likes country music. He's cool. He's a hardworking player, works hard. He's always trying to find a way to simplify the game plan for our players. He's always asking for everybody's opinion. You know, what's best for you? I'm not going to be more comfortable with throwing or handing it off. Whatever it is, just the type of leader that this team needs. He stepped up to the plate. Since when he started, he's doing everything the right way.
Closing out games has been a problem for you guys. How much of a role do you see yourself trying to play in improving that process? I said closing out games.
That's tough, man. Yeah. The defense is playing so well. That's really helping us out. That's really the big difference. In this ball team, this ball club, actually give us more opportunities to make more plays with the ball. You know, kind of bailing us out. We've been putting points on, having a hard time. Kind of closing the game, so we got to find a way to get it done. Just focusing, just sticking with the play. We got to find a way to get it done.
You see yourself playing a larger role in that process, though?
Yeah, I think myself and everyone on offense. That's something that we all have to play a part in.
Right here,
I don't see that as embarrassing. I think Barrett's probably the best running back to ever play this game. They compare us probably to the cutbacks and the shaking. It's a big gap for us.
Sean, what
is the emphasis during the bye week of reducing the number of times you're seeing defenders in the backfield? And did some of those wrinkles work, or had you seen them work out in the last game?
Yeah, a little bit. Like I said, they're making adjustments. Like Coach said, they're making adjustments. But small things you guys are guessing. You know, sometimes we don't stack some of them. We're making so many plays over top.
Closing
out the games, LeSean, is it, I mean, what got you guys the lead and stuff, is it maybe a good idea just to keep playing that way instead of trying to shift it to something else? Or I mean, just what's your personal, I know you don't make the decision.
Yeah, that's not my call, but just, I mean, those are obvious things. I mean, when you play the game, everything's up from the top of the playbook to the bottom, runs, passes, play actions, whatever it is, screens. Kind of late in the game, you want to close the game out. You want to keep the clock going. So you don't want to risk a pass. You don't want to risk a turnover. So you can keep on the ground. That's kind of the easiest way to really explain it. And the defense kind of knows it. Where if we
beginning and middle of the game, you know that everything's up. You know, in late game, you know we're going to run the ball.
That's LeSean McCoy. He's going to be a key part of Sunday's game against the Detroit Lions, facing a very strong rushing defense. You're going to see that wide nine front that the Eagles used to run, and you're going to see two outstanding defensive tackles that are going to be in McCoy's way. LeSean's going to have to find a way to navigate through that line, but there are going to be holes for him to run through, so it's going to be interesting to watch. If the Eagles take a lead, pay attention to what they do in terms of holding the lead. The fourth quarter has been an issue for this team in recent weeks. Chip Kelly acknowledged that the team needs to do a better job closing out games. Pay attention to that. Also, pay attention to the turnover differential. The Eagles are plus 13 this season in their 7 wins. If they can continue on that pace, they will stay in playoff contention. We will have all the coverage, all the reaction in the Philadelphia Inquirer on Inquirer.com, on Philly.com, and on the Bird's Eye View blog. And, of course, on the Bird's Eye View podcast, we will be back next week discussing the Lions game, looking ahead to the Vikings game, and all the other topics surrounding the Eagles. For the Inquirer, I'm Zach Berman. Thanks for listening.